This is the No Dabba Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by Michael Dowden, fellow geek who happens to know about Firebase. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening, Michael, to join me.
Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
So to start off, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, please?
I'm happy to. I've been coding for almost 30 years. About 3 years ago, I started working on a new project, a little parking application called FlexiPark. And we finally spun that into its own business last year, and I've been working on this project full-time ever since then. And perhaps coincidentally, FlexiPark is based on a Firebase stack. So it's an Angular front-end application with a Firebase serverless backend.
What is FlexiPark?
So FlexiPark is a parking system. It consists of the mobile application to allow drivers to check into a parking space. And one of the things that this sort of system has allowed us to do is partner with small businesses that otherwise couldn't have parking automation solutions for their parking and allow them to resell their parking after business hours and make a little money on the side.
So would this be like maybe a little doctor's office or a little dentist office that's got four or five slots and they happen to be near a cinema or something?
Yeah, those work really, really well, actually. One of our best lots right now is a chiropractor right next door to a bunch of bars.
Do you guys get involved with on-street parking as well? Because I know in Boston area there were some apps where people were holding spaces and then they'd get a request and they would move their car out of a public space to allow a particular person in until the city clamped down on it.
Sure. There's a lot of parking startups, and a number of them are related to either parking meters or restricted access types of parking, typically parking garages. We're pretty unique in the fact that we are partnering almost entirely with private properties that are off-street parking.
How big is your company now?
Yeah, there's about five of us.
Nice.
It's pretty small, but it's been a really good year.
All right, so we're going to talk tonight mostly about Firebase, but before we get on to that, first we're going to cover serverless a little bit. So what is serverless and what are the different, why is it there?
Sure. So I like to define serverless a little bit by kind of the absence of things. What do we no longer have? So one of the things that we, if you look at a cloud, a typical cloud architecture, there's still a lot of network configuration. There's still a lot of operating system maintenance potentially, depending on the specific platform that you're dealing with. You probably have container management. You may still even have to run do your own scaling, for example, for your application, access control issues. In a serverless environment, scaling is a concern typically provided by the platform. Container management a lot of times is provided by the platform. So in our particular case, for example, it's an Angular application. All we have to do is manage our application with NPM, Webpack. There's no Docker to deal with or anything. The scaling is provided for us by Firebase. And so one of the things that a serverless architecture allows you to do is focus really on building your application. We don't have to worry about the DevOps. We don't have to worry about the deploying and the scaling concerns very much.
All right. So now let's move on to what is Firebase?
Sure. So there's a lot of different pieces to Firebase. One of the things that Firebase is, above all else, is an API. It is a way of managing different features or components of the Google Cloud Platform, or GCP. We've been using Firebase actually prior to the Google acquisition, and it's been really exciting to see some of the things that have happened since Google kind of brought on Firebase and started really pulling it into their infrastructure and their ecosystem. So one of the things that you can do with Firebase, for example, is build web apps, but you can also build mobile apps. You can build games. If you look at some of the languages that are supported, you have You have Java, C Sharp, C++, JavaScript, of course, and Unity, in fact. So Firebase provides a lot of different components of serverless support for what we're doing. And so we don't actually have to go with any other platforms. We don't have to go beyond the Firebase ecosystem for a lot of the things we do. The APIs that are provided give us a lot of what we need. Some of the APIs that exist, there's a core JavaScript API, for example, and then there's a specific library for almost every major framework, whether it's ViewFire, ReactFire, AngularFire, etc.
When you say you're building, let's say, phone apps and web apps, I often think of them as being very thin, and then they're communicating with some complicated back-end server. But we've said this is serverless. So where do things like your most of your business logic reside?
And I think that's going to be a case-by-case basis. It's going to really depend on your application. In our case, a lot of the application logic actually resides on the client. We actually built our client first and then started adding on capabilities to communicate outside the app by adding Firebase components after the initial client app was built. I am sure that other people would start that and perhaps think of that a little differently. It really kind of depends on what you're looking for. One of the unique aspects of a parking type of app is that most of the use cases, the person is in a big hurry and they are out on a street somewhere. They're not at home. They're not sitting on they're almost never on Wi-Fi. And so we have to really take some of those considerations into play. And so as much as we can do just on the device without bothering with the back and forth, the better.
But if you were building a web app, where would it live in a serverless world?
So this is actually in our case, it's a progressive web app that we're building. And so in that case, it is on the client. You can use other features of Firebase, for example, similar to a Lambda function or some of the other types of serverless components in other platforms, you have cloud functions. A cloud function is effectively a small bit of code. In our case, we're writing a node, so it's a small set of node functions that sit out there that we can call. We can execute an HTTPS request to that cloud function just the same way we could if it was residing in a normal server-based ecosystem. Some of the other things you can do with cloud functions, though, would effectively be similar to database triggers. So a cloud function can react to data being written, updated, or removed from your database and can react to that event taking place and then can go off and do other things. So one of the things that has allowed us to do is add features orthogonally without necessarily even having to update the client application or make any other particular changes. If I need to go out to third-party API to enrich some of my data or to send some communications, I can do that by creating a brand new function that reacts to changes in the data.
You use the term progressive web app. What's that?
A progressive web app is kind of an ephemeral thing. It has been defined primarily by Google as a specific type of it's typically a single page web app that has a number of specific components that make it a progressive web app. One of those is a manifest file that defines some of the application metadata, including the name of the application, maybe a version and some icons. One of the things you can do once you have a manifest, for example, is on a mobile device, you can actually say add to home screen right from the browser. It'll drop the icon on your home screen, and from that point on, you can launch it from your desktop on your phone, just as if it were a native application. A lot of times, to reach a fully progressive status, you'll have service workers running in the background of the browser, the service workers can be prefetching and caching data. They can actually prefetch parts of your code so that you can truly lazy load your application, including third-party libraries. In fact, for some of the Firebase APIs, they strongly recommend using that sort of loading, preloading mechanism for some of their APIs. So you'll bring up the application and it'll load the APIs behind the scenes before the user actually starts interacting with things.
You mentioned that there are libraries available, Firebase libraries available for a lot of different frameworks, but if I was writing, let's say, a phone app or a web app, what language would I typically write it in?
I guess that would really depend upon your specific case, right? If you were doing an iPhone app or a native iPhone app or a native Android app, you would probably be using the APIs. They have a rich RESTful API ecosystem as well.
So Firebase doesn't impose any language restrictions on your app?
There are no built-in language restrictions. However, if you're picking a language that has an API library published for it, obviously you're going to find that's probably a little bit easier to work with. Another thing that's worth noting is there's actually two kind of very different ways of interacting with Firebase. There's the client angle, which in our case, the end user is connecting directly to Firebase via the API. We're actually using, of course, the Angular Fire API. We're building an Angular application. But the other way you may connect is through the admin SDK. The admin SDK has a slightly different native language support and allows you to connect to some of the administrative features. So, for example, within the admin SDK, you have some advanced access to authentication. You have the ability to build out some of your own authentication infrastructure if you're not happy with the built-in authentication pipeline that Firebase provides. Or you can just use directly from the client authentication that is provided by Firebase.
I'm not sure this question even makes sense, but does Firebase live somewhere, or is Firebase kind of like AWS and Azure? It's in the Google Cloud and it's reachable via APIs.
Yep. Firebase lives as a part of the Google Cloud platform. And if I were going to describe Firebase, at this point in time, Firebase has been pretty well absorbed into the Google Cloud platform. In fact, a number of features of the Google Cloud platform have been pulled into Firebase. And the reason that's important is now there is a consistent, cohesive API for an application developer to be able to get to those features. So you have things like your file storage. You have things like your cloud functions. Of course, the database, which is the original core of Firebase. And then there's a machine learning kit, all available through the Firebase set of tools. So Firebase is really focused on the application developer in a way that perhaps the Google Cloud platform kind of wasn't. It was trying to be a platform to replace any other infrastructure. Firebase is really trying to cater to application developers, I think.
What made you choose Firebase over, let's say, the offerings from AWS or Azure?
One of them was definitely simplicity. I have done a lot of DevOps. I do not enjoy DevOps. I am not good at DevOps. And I definitely understood that that was going to be part of it. Pricing was definitely a factor as well. We were in production before we had to move to a paid version of Firebase. And so those are big components. It's also really easy to work with and has pretty good documentation.
Was there something from AWS or Azure that was comparable, or is there at the moment?
I am unaware of anything that... I think that there are some very similar types of things in Azure at this point in time, but in AWS, here's the problem with AWS. Do you know what is available in AWS? Because that's a really long list.
Oh, not from week to week. Sure. I mean, we saw when I met you out in DevUp, I found about AppSync, the GraphQL as a service. Very impressive. I think that only came out in August.
Sure. And does AWS have something comparable to this? It almost has to. They have such a long list of things. But the thing I like about Firebase is I have one place that I can go and it does basically all the things that I need. Now, obviously, there are going to be some types of applications that are going to need some very specific types of features. If Firebase doesn't have it, you're either going to have to look elsewhere in the Google Cloud ecosystem, or you're going to have to start looking at Azure or Amazon and see what maybe they have that is not available here. But if your goal is to deploy a brand new mobile or web application, or even possibly a game within a simple framework, it's hard to beat. Is the same functionality elsewhere? Of course it is. For the same cost and overhead to me as a developer, probably not.
You said that most of your code in your application is on your client. Where do you store your data then?
So the data is stored for us in the Firebase real-time database. And the real-time database is the original Firebase database. One of the features of the real-time database is that it supports up to 100,000 concurrent users. So that means that if you have up to that number of users connected and looking at the same bit of data, one person updates it, within a few milliseconds, everybody sees that update without you as an application developer having to do any extra work. So that's pretty powerful, and I think that's one of the reasons that it's used for games, right? Because if you want to share game state in a multiplayer type of situation, that's a pretty cool way of doing it. One of the applications that is based on Firebase that I use pretty regularly is called Roll20, and it is a role-playing game platform for people that like playing pen and paper role-playing games, your Pathfinder, your D&D, etc. And it has audiovisual support. It has maps and characters and character sheets and rolling of dice and all kinds of great stuff baked into the platform. And that entire communication layer is actually based on Firebase. So getting back to the question about where you store your data, the real-time database is definitely one place you can store your data. And it's what we're still using for the most part. But a new feature of Firebase is the Cloud Firestore. And it's still technically in beta, but the Cloud Firestore is also a real-time database, but it adds query capabilities and some advanced scaling functionality beyond what the real-time database itself can handle. So the real-time database and the Cloud Firestore are both essentially JSON type of data stores. In fact, within the real-time database, you're able to import and export JSON directly into specific nodes in the database, which is pretty cool.
And I guess I'm not in any way restricted from using a traditional SQL database. If I wanted to, I could put in my connection string, communicate with it, and perform old-fashioned SQL in my applications.
In your applications, of course, you would have to have a separate place for that to reside. There's no place within Firebase itself to do that. I believe there are SQL options on Google Cloud Platform that you could take advantage of.
As a sort of a follow-on for that, if I wanted to go, let's say, with the approach of throwing a microservice in front of my database, it's no problem, I imagine, from within my client application to access an external API, pull data in, send data back. That's normal day-to-day kind of thing.
Of course.
Yeah.
And I mean, we access a number of different APIs from within our application. And the other thing that we do in some cases is have a cloud function that we call directly and let that manage data marshaling and that sort of thing.
One of the things I noticed when I was preparing for this interview was the suite of, I don't know, are they called apps that are available in Firebase? It's
sure, there's
very extensive.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you can do. So one of the things they've done recently in the developer, in the console, it's not really a developer console, it's kind of an admin console. There's a develop section, and some of the things you have available as an app dev developer is authentication. So you can have username and password authentication right out of the gate. They have a bunch of different OAuth types of providers: Facebook, Twitter, GitHub, Google. They have phone number based authentication, and even the Google Play Games authentication. There's also an anonymous authentication, and that's actually pretty cool. So the way the anonymous authentication works, if somebody comes in with their device and you want them to start using your app, but you want to save their user profile and data about them as a user, you can authenticate them anonymously, hang on to that, attached to that user ID, and the next time they come back to your application, your web application, or whatever, with that same device, they're going to get assigned that same user ID, and you're going to be able to keep track of that information. If they later decide, yeah, they're ready to have an account, maybe they logged in with Google, now you've retained all that, and they can have access to it the next time they log in. So that's all kind of built in, which is pretty amazing, because managing authentication is both really risky and kind of time-consuming. At the beginning of the year, with a couple of my partners, we actually wrote an article for O'Reilly. It's on their blog, titled "OAuth in 15 Minutes with Firebase." And that's about how long it takes to get up and running. Of course, you have the databases. You have storage, which is Google Cloud storage buckets, and it's just normal file storage in the cloud. So we use that for managing images and that sort of thing.
Could a non, let's say, a more general application, not, let's say, a Firebase application, use that aspect of Firebase for that one thing, for authentication?
You can, yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah, because that, you know, even if you don't necessarily want to go down the road of building a progressive web app or a phone app or something, but you would still like that someone else take care of your authentication for you. That's a great feature.
It is.
Another one of the features I was looking at earlier was a Crashlytics. That seems very helpful as well. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So there are a number of items under their quality tab, and Crashlytics is one of them. Now, Crashlytics, they also have some performance tools. Crashlytics and their performance tools are exclusively reserved for mobile applications. But what's interesting, and there's also an analytics section as well to the console. There's a lot of analytics functionality. And so one of the things that Firebase is doing is taking some of the application analytics that Google Analytics would normally have for a web application and kind of making that same level of thing available to mobile apps as well. Crashlytics actually helps you kind of see what's going on in your application, specifically for mobile applications. Now, for web applications, there's some other tools you can use. Because we are a web tool, instead of using the Crashlytics that's built into Firebase, what we're using is TrackJS, which is a JavaScript
Todd
framework. Yeah, Todd Gardner's. It's been working extremely well for us, being able to see what's actually going on in the different devices.
Another one of the features from Firebase that I was, again, kind of impressed with was the remote config, because config isn't hard, but it's hard to get all the features you might want, and it's time consuming, and generally it's kind of, you think of it at the end for a lot of people. I know maybe more disciplined people do it at the start, but can you tell me about that one?
Again, actually, I have not used the remote config option, unfortunately. There are a number of different things that I'm very interested in. Some of them are mobile application only and not for web app. And some of them simply require a little bit more setup than what we've just needed at this point in time. The cloud messaging, for example, is pretty interesting, because cloud messaging provides a pretty simple way of tying into direct-to-user messages from the back end into the application, along with the in-app messaging.
I know you said you don't like DevOps, but at some point we have to deploy our app. So what is the story with Firebase for deployment and, let's say, CI/CD and the like?
Sure. So there is a really wonderful CLI tool that Firebase provides, and it allows you to do quite a number of things. You can actually back up your database, restore your database, pull in your users and a few other things, you can deploy to the Firebase hosting. You can deploy just one function or multiple functions, and you have a lot of control. You can deploy just database rules. So one of the components of Firebase is a whole hosting framework, and it's unbelievably fast and pretty good feature-wise. We have been able to achieve an A rating from security headers on Firebase hosting, and we have been able to achieve some pretty good performance as well from Firebase hosting. And it's as simple as for us to deploy our application, because it's an Angular app, we'll do npm build --prod and then Firebase deploy. It's two command line instructions, and boom, we've just released an update. Once that deploy completes, within the admin console, you'll actually see the new version out there. It'll tell you how many files are out there. If at any point you realize that something is wrong, you're having a problem, you can go back to a previous release in history, click on it, and make that the new current. So it's really easy to do rollbacks and to go back to previously deployed versions if you have any problems. And that actually makes it pretty safe from a CI/CD standpoint if you do run into problems. So we actually do continuous integration, continuous deployment to our staging environment, which is effectively just another Firebase instance from our production Firebase. And we use Bitbucket's built-in pipeline to do all that for us. It runs the builds, runs the tests, and then deploys that out to Firebase. You can, of course, use anything else. Any CI server would work just fine.
Talking about the rollback, if you've made changes to your real-time database, will the rollback also bring back the old structure or the old data?
No. So one of the things that you do have to kind of do on your own is manage data structure. So when you do a deploy, there are a set of database rules that can be part of that deployment. It's one of the specific deploy targets. You can deploy everything, which is your hosted files, your storage rules, your database rules, and your functions. You can deploy just the database rules. And the database rules are a set of basically expressions at different levels of your database that resolve to true or false to determine if they have read access, write access separately. There are some indexing capabilities as well within those rules. But the data structure itself is kind of on you to manage on your own. There's no tooling around that. We have been fortunate that we haven't made any really big mistakes, and we haven't had to radically alter our data structure yet in the last couple years, which is, I think, very fortunate. We've taken great care whenever creating new structures. And in some cases, we've been pretty flippant about duplicating data for performance reasons, for how easy it makes it to write security rules around who can access that data. But that has also helped us out, because a lot of cases that data is in more than one location anyway. But if you need to restructure your database, it's kind of on you. One of the typical ways that a lot of people will do that is kind of build that into your application code, right? The first time you hit something or grab a piece of data, convert it to the new format as part of your code. When you do it that way, deploying a newer version of the code will kind of bring your database along with it automatically to a point. One of the things that I have done, there was one case where we needed to go back and kind of repopulate some older data with some newer standards. And I actually created a cloud function specifically for that. We ran the deploy, ran the cloud function, deleted the cloud function when that was done, and was able to update the database pretty seamlessly that way.
What's the pricing model for Firebase?
Firebase, like most serverless platforms, is pretty well pay as you go. The free plan, especially for a startup like us, the free plan will take you pretty far. And I've been extremely pleased with what you can get for free. They also have a what they call their flame plan. It's just $25 a month. Never goes up. You have quite a lot of opportunities. You can do a lot of hosting for that. Transfer up to 50 gigabytes a month. There's access to a large percentage of the features and functionality of Firebase, and you have access to some Google Cloud Platform items. Some of the Google Cloud Platform APIs, so if you want to start using some of the Google APIs, like maybe the Maps API, time zone APIs, and different things, some of those are available in the Flame plan. Some of those require you upgrade all the way to the Blaze plan, which is 100% pay as you go. And so just for example, if you're talking about the real-time database, it's $5 for every gigabyte you store per month, which works great for us who has like a gigabyte, under a gigabyte of data, because it's crazy how much data you can actually store for that for certain types of applications. But at the same time, if you're talking about a big data application, go fish. You don't want this. It probably wouldn't be a good fit anyway. One of the interesting things is a lot of times when you sign up, when we originally signed up for the full plan, Google's offering a deal where you would get $300 free. We've been running on that all year. It's very affordable for specific types of applications.
Yeah, that's impressive. I was thinking when you said $25 a month, that's probably a little less than I'm paying for web hosting and podcast hosting per month as it is. And,
right.
You know, I don't have any, obviously, massive amounts of data or anything like
sure.
that. It seems that a lot of these companies are, you know, they've got loss leaders, as you call it, in retail. You know, they're selling, they're hoping to bring you in as a customer because, you know, the war is still going on between the providers, Azure, AWS, yep. Google. I know IBM are trying to come into it. And
sure.
if they can get you, they'll hold you, I imagine.
Honestly, as best as I can tell from being in this ecosystem for a couple of years, Google's strategy right now is to make us developers really, really happy. If they can get developers adopting their platform instead of selling to the infrastructure guys, the CTOs, the CIOs, they want the developers to adopt this stuff. And I think it's a good strategy, and it certainly worked for me. That's kind of one of the reasons that I'm in this ecosystem right now.
Yeah, it sounds like the approach to companies that have APIs, it's all about developer experience. I had a podcast with a couple of guys from a company called LucyBot, and they were saying the easiest API wins because the costs aren't that different. But if a developer can get up and running in 5 minutes as opposed to 2 days, that's where the difference is.
Or if you can have one developer instead of five developers, yeah. I mean.
Absolutely. Michael, any final notes before we wrap up for the evening?
I think that's a pretty good overview of Firebase. Again, one of the things that we did, I think that's probably somewhat unique, is starting from the standpoint of the mobile app. And for me, I came from a background of doing Java enterprise architecture, a lot of SQL databases, right? Completely radically different from this. So it took me quite a while to wrap my head around the idea of deliberately duplicating data for performance, the idea of a JSON data store instead of a SQL data store, building client first instead of service layer first. But coming at it from a startup perspective where we really need to provide value very quickly to be able to prove out a concept very quickly, get up and running and get users on board and everything, it's a pretty compelling way of wanting to run a business. I've been very excited by not just the technology of it, right, but how it's enabled us to be very dynamic and agile as an organization and be able to add new features pretty painlessly and kind of adapt over the last couple of years. So I guess that's my experience with it. It's been pretty rewarding.
If people want to find your company, what's the website?
Sure. Our application is flexipark.com. And the parent company of FlexiPark, which is my primary business at this point in time, is called Andromeda. And that would be andromeda16.com.
And then you mentioned an O'Reilly article that people could read up on. What was the title of that again? I'll put all the links in. But if people don't click the links, they might be able to type it in themselves.
OAuth in 15 minutes with a Firebase.
Fantastic. Michael Dowden, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much, Brian. It's been a pleasure.
If you like this episode, you might also like episode 102 with Spencer Schneidenbach about REST APIs, or episode 99 with Jimmy Bogard about containers, or episode 91 with Adam Ralph about end-service bus, microservices, and service-oriented architectures. Music was Returned by Nisi23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Firefly by Poddington Bear from the album Background.